Welcome to the For Love and Money podcast, the show where business and social purpose meet to inspire a movement for positive change. Here's your host, Carolyn Butler Madden.
I'm delighted to introduce Paula Kensington, award-winning CFO, business leader and director of consulting group PK Advisory, and founder and CEO of CFO Conversations. I want to open with a quote from Paula. Imagine waking up to a world without nature. Blue skies replaced by grey, grass by dirt, oceans turned to dust and mud. This isn't some far-fetched science fiction movie. It's the reality we are facing now. We are staring down the gun at the end of the world as we know it, and business leaders need to unite to implement new ways of thinking and doing before it's too late. Now, in her recently published green paper, Paula draws on global research. She highlights the pitfalls of the past and offers hope for the future by outlining a strategic roadmap out of outmoded, profit-focused business practices to a new planet-centric approach with CFOs and CEOs leading the way. More than just a numbers person, CFOs are key stewards that can drive change from within to align business outcomes with earth outcomes, to go beyond carbon credits and to turn profit into purpose, she says. So our conversation on this interview centers on three key themes. First, why should CFOs lead the purpose agenda? Second, how do we flip the business model? And third, how do we reconstitute what we value as business success? If you are a CFO, this episode is especially for you. You're welcome. If you're not a CFO, the value this interview offers is understanding that purpose and sustainability are no longer a nice to have. The compliance stakes are gearing up, and they're gearing up soon. Paula shares her thoughts, her insights, and paths to navigating from business as usual to a new world of business. Whether you're a CFO or not, I urge you to share this episode with as many CFOs as possible. As Paula says, the future has arrived. So, what are you going to do about it? Paula, welcome to the For Love and Money podcast.
Thanks, Carolyn. Good to be here. I'm excited for our conversation today.
So am I. I think it's going to be a real meaty one. So, kick off with a question I ask all my guests, and that is there a role for love in business?
Yeah, I've been reflecting on this question in preparation, and I think absolutely there's a role for love in business. And I think you've talked about this on some of your other episodes around, if we're not in business for love, then what are we in business for? And I think that might come as a surprise from someone who's in finance, because often we think, well, people are in business to make money, which, you know, is true, but something that, you know, overrides money, overrides any of that financial return is, do you actually love what you're doing? And I think if we look back, you know, 50 years, business is supposed to be there for service of others. So that's got to be the whole reason behind love in business. And I think if you don't love your job, then you hate going to work and it always feels really difficult. So I think the same is true in business. If you're not doing what it is that you love, or what your customers love, then kind of feels like there's not really a sustainable business there at all.
Yeah, it's such an interesting question to explore, isn't it? You know, when you say business is supposed to be in service of others, yes, and yet we've gone away from that path, right? But I think as humans, I think people intuitively feel that need to be connected to something that is in service of value, of real value to others, not just a manufactured innovation or whatever it is. And that intuition is coming through, you know, in droves. It was coming before the pandemic, but clearly the pandemic has accelerated it. And I think people are questioning, you know, what am I doing? You know, why am I spending all my time here as employees? But also business owners, I think, are really looking at how do we level up? And business leaders are on that path, some more than others. So Paula, let's start with your background. Can you give our listeners an insight into your career and where you are today. So if you could kick off with, you know, what you're doing today, and then take us on a little journey.
Yeah, sure. Okay. So today I'm running my own business. I do a number of different things, but predominantly I do CFO advisory. So CFO demand for smaller businesses, you know, anything between a million dollar kind of startup to a $30 million established business. And I do that for four or five different businesses where I'm their part-time CFO. So they don't often have a finance team. They might have a bookkeeper, and they've got to a stage in their business where they realize that they actually need someone in to help them, you know, think about what their business model is and what they're doing, and kind of, you know, that maturity level kind of opens up where they realize they need the skill set of a CFO to add that compliance and financial rigor. But also I think that soundboarding. So a big part of what I do is soundboarding with the owners, with the founders, and, you know, give them someone to bounce their ideas off. Yeah, that's important in business. And often business, you can be so isolated in that smaller, well, not even SME, in that sort of micro business, you can feel very isolated. So that's a big part of what I do. But also what I do is mentor others. So I do a program called Intentional Leadership, where I mentor groups of actually females, but that's just how it's played out in corporate life, where, you know, people need to find their voice and be encouraged to use their voice and step up into their own power, really. And I do that for a number of businesses. But I also have CFO Conversations, which is an initiative I created in 2018 on the back of realizing that there isn't anywhere that you can talk to other CFOs, you know, anonymously or not, about what it's like to be a CFO, the pressures of everyday life as a CFO. And so I set up a YouTube channel, I set up LinkedIn, and that's been going now for 5 years. And, you know, and really sort of using it as a global platform to encourage knowledge sharing, knowledge building, conversations, anything but selling. It's actually how do CFOs talk to other CFOs. So that's what I do now.
That's really interesting. And I guess we'll get into it in this conversation, but I'm really curious as to what the tenor of those conversations are in those roundtables now, because there is so much change happening. And can you give us a peek preview of what that might be, just like
flying? Yeah. I mean, we sort of talk about, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly. So it kind of feels like a safe space, even though they realize that they're out on YouTube. It's where we actually get the insights between what's actually happening on the ground versus what we hear in mainstream media about various, you know, challenges, and especially now around sustainability. But, you know, way back sort of 4 or 5 years before the pandemic, we were talking about leadership and communication and, you know, how to drive your finance team. I mean, just standard operating, you know, stuff. And yet no one was kind of talking about how we do it. And yeah, so finance people can be very protective of who they are, because we've always spent, you know, our upbringing, our study, our professional life around knowing the standards and knowing how to report. And when we don't know something, or we feel that we don't know something, then we just go silent. We go into this shell that says, I'm not going to speak about this because I don't know everything about it. So that's why that kind of introspective lens of a finance executive can be, you know, in the past, they haven't always been strong leaders. So I think I'm trying to help get out of that by demonstrating, you know, the good stories and the bad stories about leadership.
That must be hugely valuable to have that that ability to have conversations and to have them with people from around the world as well, not just in Australia. That would be drop some really interesting insight. So before we get into the thrust of that, please share your just briefly
how
background
I got here.
Of your career and how you got here. Yeah.
So, I left school at 16. I didn't go to university, and I just wanted to be an adult and work. And the last thing I wanted to be was an accountant, because my dad was and my older brother is. And so I went off into the world of retail and fashion. I thought this is much more exciting than boring old accounting. And then I realized that perhaps fashion and standing on my feet in retail wasn't actually going to serve me as well as I had hoped. When I got to 21, I actually decided for myself to become an accountant, which I think is a lot more empowering than being told by your father and your mother to that's what you should do. So anyway, so dad got his dream that his daughter qualified to be an accountant. And then I spent 30 years moving up through the ranks of finance. Like when I started work, I was writing checks and writing manual Kalamazoo cash book ledgers. We didn't have computers. Yes, I am that old. And
join the club.
And I spent, you know, the first 10 years of my life progressing through the ranks of finance, which I think has really served me well, because I know exactly what goes on exactly at every stage in the finance journey. And then I came to Australia. So that was in England. And then I came to Australia 15 years ago in my mid-30s, and then really arrived in the lucky country, because I actually got my first job within 3 weeks of being here. And within 3 months of that, I was asked to stay as financial controller. And then, you know, in 12 months, they asked me to step up to be CFO, acting CFO. So within a year of being in Australia, I got my first CFO gig, which, you know, I just thought was an amazing opportunity. I hadn't even reached 40. And, you know, here I was being the CFO of an ASX listed company, and, you know, didn't look back from there. And then I guess after about 12 years of doing CFO work for a number of different tech businesses and service businesses, I wanted more. I got awarded a CFO of the Year award in 2012 from Thomson Reuters, and that kind of whetted my appetite that I wanted more. So I'd been recognized for the work I'd done and the teams that I'd been working with, and then I wanted to do more. So I then looked around for a CEO role, and it was hard to kind of find when you don't really have that written on your resume that that's what you do. And so I thought, well, you know, I've got a redundancy from a business that we'd sold. And I thought, well, I'll just see what I can do for myself. You know, if I run my own business, I can be the CEO and the CFO, and I can be anything I want. And now I am living the dream and have learned more in the last 5 years than I think I ever did in the last 10. But anyway, that's another story.
Yeah, fantastic. And now you're actually running three different companies.
Yeah.
And organizations. Is there much crossover between the three of them?
Yes, there is. There is. I run a business school, and I run the network, female network LBD group, and then I have my CFO advisory business. So yeah, it's very intersected.
And you mentioned with the mentoring business that you know, you work with leaders and they just so happen to be all women or mostly women. So I just wanted to dig into that a little bit. Do you think that's because women see the need for change and want to step up as leaders? Is there something behind that female centric?
Yeah, I think there is. And I think females are more open to being, well, I'm going to say being honest, but that's a huge generalization, to say that, you know, I don't know something and I need some help. And I think I found this over the years, that women are very more comfortable in saying that and opening it up and saying, can you help me, than a lot of men. You know, I was part of this CFO circle way before I did my own CFO conversations. And I used to go to these lunches that were organized, and I think I was the only woman in about 10 guys. And it felt like it was really lonely, because I was the only one that would ever speak up and say how I felt and where the challenges were. And the guys were almost kind of too scared to, or, you know, did it make them look exposed or vulnerable or weak or whatever, you know? And thankfully those days are sort of getting a little bit longer behind us. But, you know, I think generally now women do tend to recognize that they want help. And I'm not sort of scared to ask for it.
Yeah. And I think as well, and I asked that question knowing where our conversation is leading towards, you know, we're going to talk about purpose and the ESG agenda and, you know, sustainability and CFOs, their role there. And I guess I asked that question because I know with my client base, it is probably 80% female leaders who are leading the agenda, and also globally. I was speaking to Afdel Aziz, another guest on this podcast, and he is a purpose champion consultant over in LA. And he said that 90% of their clients at his consultancy, Conspiracy of Love, he said 90, maybe 95% are women. And he said without any hesitation, he said women are leading the purpose agenda, which I think is a really interesting insight. And to think about why is that? And CFOs, I don't know, is there a skew to men or women within the CFO community?
Oh, I'd say it was still skewed towards men. Yeah.
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 So, so interested to see with the CFO roundtables that you run, is that female dominated, or do you have men in there?
I get probably half and half, I think, which is good. But I do think you're right. I think purpose feels, that action of purpose feels like you're actually being more than doing. And I think being is more of a feminine trait than doing, and doing is very masculine. And I said to you, I think in our preparation, that, you know, there's a lot of masculinity about me, and laughing that, you know, my husband has probably got more feminine traits than I have. So maybe that makes me a good vessel to bring men and women CFOs together, because, you know, I have this sort of masculine action orientated doing, but I have, you know, the ability to hold space for that femininity as well.
I think that makes you a great vehicle for that, a bridge, if you like, because, you know, it, I think particularly for men, older men as well, more tradition, who have had more traditional experience, and that's what they know, it gives a sense of security knowing your huge experience over, did you say over 30 years or something
years.
Like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And knowing that you sort of speak their language.
I think because I come from a family of three and two brothers, I've grown up with that masculine energy and been very comfortable with it. And throughout my career, I had one female mentor in the background, and everyone else, every boss, every director, everybody in my career has been a man.
Interesting.
So, yeah. And some of that is, we'll get into it in our conversation, but some of that I think has been some of the challenges, but, you know, I can see that. And I think you're right that men probably see that in me, and are not, they're kind of comfortable that, you know, I get that world. And I think that's the benefit of CFO conversations, is that we get each other, that we're credible. You know, the finance community can be mistrusting of others but trusting of ourselves, because we kind of get the language, and we understand what each other's doing. And often we think, and maybe this is old thinking, but often we've thought, you know, people are trying to sell something to us. People are trying to get us on side. You know, it's kind of that sort of, what's the underlying tone to why people are being nice to us.
And also, financial people deal in substance, right? It comes down to the hard facts.
Yeah.
You know, is this business profitable? What do we need to do to make it profitable? You know, looking at the real sort of questions of substance. And I think there is a danger that the purpose and sustainability agenda is written off as woke, fluff, you know, a trend that will pass.
Yeah.
When in fact, you know, I think CFOs can actually lead that agenda. Let's get into that question.
Yeah.
Why should CFOs lead the purpose and sustainability agenda?
Well, and there's a number of reasons why. And I think before we even get into regulation, I think the CFO is at the heart of the business. Very, very few businesses will have a decision, or a meaty decision that's made, or money that's spent, without the finance person knowing, without the CFO knowing. So that puts the CFO right at the heart of the business. So if that's true, then it absolutely makes sense for the CFO to be driving it, because, you know, we see every decision that's being made. We say, yes, that's a good idea. No, I don't think that's a good idea. So you know, that's that it's the perfect match, if you like. But also the CFO is very much the trusted advisor. You know, I've been in a number of board meetings where I've actually heard the CEO lying, and the chairman will look at me and say, Paula, what do you think? And I say, well, Mr. Chair, I see the numbers like this. And I won't say that the CEO's lying, but he can absolutely read between the lines and he'll know that, you know, I've got the truth. And so that's happened on more than one occasion. So the CFO is the trusted advisor in the business, but also the CFO, you know, again, is comprehensive. I think, you know, we see everything. We used to say from cradle to grave, but now I say from cradle to cradle, because it's that circular notion of not something's being born, you know, through to death. It's kind of like ongoing.
Yeah.
So we've got that comprehensive ability to see something through, to start something, to make sure that we don't just think it's a fad. We don't think it's, oh, well, that was a good idea, and now it's kind of dissipated. It's actually no, let's see this through. Let's follow where we said we were going to go. So, you know, we set a strategy and we want to actually see that strategy through. And also, I think, you know, the CFO is transparent. And, you know, I think from that world of reporting, that we know how to report, we know how to challenge, and we know how to make sure that the numbers are correct and that we have some assurance around that. And then going back to regulation and standards, that, you know, the CFO can go to prison for doing the wrong thing. So clearly that's a motivation to make sure that not just myself and the finance community, but the business is doing the right things, and that we understand what the business is doing, and that something isn't going on behind our backs that we don't know. So we make it our point, we make it a point to know exactly what's going on. So I think that's why the CFO is well placed to drive the ESG agenda. And I was reading actually, again, in preparation for our conversation, that BCG, so Boston Consulting Group, actually says that they've tested this, and they've got a CFO Excellence Index report that says when the CFO leads the sustainability agenda, the business is more successful. And if they've done that across however many thousands of businesses, then, you know, I think that's something to be relied on, that if the CFO is driving it, you know that you can be trusted in getting something done.
And this is, it makes utter sense to me for all the reasons you've talked about, that that CFOs can really lead this agenda and arguably should lead this agenda. I guess the question I have is, you don't see, I'm trying to think of an instance where a CFO has done that. Actually, do you know what? I can think of one, it wasn't the CFO, but Paul Polman, who is the former CEO of Unilever globally. He actually came from Nestle. I think I'm right in that. And I think he was CFO at Nestle.
Right.
So Unilever was his first CEO role. And on his, I've told this story before, but I love it so much. On the first day of his job in the role of CEO, his first ever CEO role in a large corporate organization, he basically made a public announcement saying Unilever will no longer be issuing quarterly reports, quarterly financial reports. They would be looking at long-term value creation over short-term value creation. And he basically said to investors, respectfully, if you don't like this, I suggest you take your money elsewhere. And then he stewarded Unilever over 10 years based on a strategy, which was the Unilever Sustainable Living Plan. And under his leadership, Unilever have become transformed. They're still on the journey. There are still things to do.
Yeah.
But I hadn't thought about that before. He came from a financial background. And I guess that gave some confidence in his leadership as well.
Yeah.
That he came from that background with substance and understanding the need for the purpose agenda to drive profitability, if not short-term profitability, medium to long-term growth.
Yeah.
So yeah, but outside of that, you know, I'm not aware. It doesn't mean it's not happening, but I'm not aware of CFOs leading this agenda. So I guess the question is, what do you think is holding them back from taking the leadership mantle?
Well, and I think it was something that I related to earlier in the conversation around, if the CFO doesn't know everything about something, then they can kind of go back into their shell, and they just don't want to shine a light on something that they don't know 100% about. And I think that is the biggest thing that's holding CFOs back, because it's kind of, up until these new standards come out in the new year, it's been very voluntary, and it's been a bit grey, and it's been a bit sort of fluffy, and it's kind of like, well, you work out what you want to report, you work out, you tell us what the biggest implications are, the ESG goals that you want to measure yourself against. It's very subjective, and I think finance leaders are very, you know, concrete in the results. Like, the numbers can't be subjective, they're kind of, they are what they are. So I think that is an area where perhaps there's a little uncertainty and a little uncomfortableness that's holding them back. And to be honest, I've been looking at around at the agendas and the different task force for nature disclosures and financial disclosures. And, you know, I mean, it's a jungle out there, literally, of what should I do? And I think that's been some of the sort of challenges that are holding CFOs back. Plus, it's not mandatory. So if I don't have to do this, I've got a gazillion other things that I have to do. So let me do those first, and I'll get to this voluntary one later.
Yeah, interesting. And I guess this is where your CFO conversations comes in, right? But picking up on what you said, it's not mandatory. I've had a few conversations with a couple of people with financial backgrounds overseas, in fact, and they have said that they believe, you know, mandatory reporting on impact is coming, and it's coming very soon, not as a giving back thing, but as part of the balance sheet, you know, that there is going, and we're seeing, you know, this expectation is growing, but it's really going to land smack bang in the middle of the CFOs in the middle of the CFO's agenda.
Yeah.
Because ultimately we need to find a way of valuing purpose, impact, you know, within businesses, because as you said, you know, that CFO index report, actually, I'd love to share a link if you're able to give us show notes.
Yeah.
Show that purposeful organizations are more profitable. That's what you said, was it?
Yeah.
And there's a growing body of evidence around that. So that's another one I'd love to add to the documentation that we've got. But yeah, I guess it's coming. It is going to land smack bang on the CFO's agenda.
Yep.
So, you know, I don't know over what time period. Have you got any sense of what that might be?
So we've been talking about this. So international regulatory standards, IFRS basically, have got two standards that are coming out. And I think we're going to hear in the next 1 or 2 months when they're actually coming out. But I think most people think it's January 2024.
So imminently. So
effective for those Australian companies listening with a 30 June year end, potentially from the 1st of July, that rolls into FY24, there could be, you know, certainly some disclosure 12 months' time. So that's why people, because CFOs now are starting to actually be more interested and tell me more, and how do I learn, and what do I need to do? And there's all sorts of activities going on with CAANZ locally, and, you know, other international accounting body. So there is a lot more heat that's now been applied, and I think that's directing the CFO, because now they realize that it is mandatory.
Enjoying the podcast? If you're looking for more inspiration, head to our website, thecauseeffect.com.au, for more resources on how you can start using your business as a force for good. or buy the For Love and Money book. Every copy sold allows us to protect 1 square meter of rainforest. Help us save 10,000 square meters by 2025.
So someone listening to this who may be a CFO, maybe in a finance department, or may know a CFO that they want to share this episode with. So let's talk to CFOs for a moment here. What can they do? What can they do now to prepare themselves?
Yeah, well, obviously it's an education piece. So I've been on that journey myself and looking at what's out there. I mean, I think, you know, have a look at CFO conversations, because I'm starting to share what I'm seeing coming out. There's a few frameworks. So COSO, or COSO, which has been out since 1993, they're kind of the risk framework around internal controls. They have a really, really good document that I've just downloaded myself on the frameworks around effective internal controls over sustainability reporting. So it's a 144-page report. I'm getting my teeth into it. I would suggest that any other CFO gets their teeth into it and works out what the hell we've got to do. And then for big business CFOs, you know, they'll go to their auditors, they'll go to their consultants to help them. You know, and I think the challenge is the kind of SMEs, the 50 to 100 mil, where, you know, we don't want to spend another $100,000 with our financial services consulting company, whoever we're with, because, you know, how do we work this out ourselves? How do we get to this ourselves? And so I think that report will help. And I'm starting to have some round tables around actually what can the CFO do. So I'm putting together a framework around, well, how do we think about this? So I've started to think about it in a regenerative way, and this might feel a little out there, but I'll give it a go anyway. I'm starting to think around campfires, right? So Bear with me. I'm thinking about having campfire conversations, which is basically my round tables. But when you're building a campfire, you have to think about the stages of building that campfire, right? You're not just going to go from zero to hero and have this great big burning, beautiful fire to cook your dinner on or keep you warm. You're going to have to do a bit of gathering. You have to go and actually find some things. And so you're going to have to find some small things and some big things and some things that will burn quickly and things that will burn slowly. So you're having this gathering. So I think this is where the CFO needs to go. We need to start gathering. What have we got in our organization? What are we doing? And start, you know, putting out the sort of the army of finance team, if you've got an army, and work out what it is that we're doing. And then once we've worked that out and we've gathered the ingredients for our fire, we can then start sorting and we can start stacking and we can start putting all the little pieces together and the kindling and the little pine cones and paper and you know, some fuel that's actually going to light the fire. So then we can start sorting and stacking and saving some of the big stuff for later because we haven't got enough energy for that yet. And then we can kind of go into that lighting phase around, well, okay, so I'm going to light it now. And that takes energy to actually do something. And then all of a sudden you've got a spark, like you've made a start, right? And if you're sitting there watching a fire, you go, oh, okay, this has started. And then you start putting on bigger sticks. And then before you know it, you've got this raging inferno of this beautiful big fire that's you know, dancing and giving out heat and everything else. So this is what I'm kind of thinking about. Well, how as a CFO can I think like this? And I think it's a really nice analogy to start to play with your own organization. And so I'm putting together a framework and conversations around that. And I think, you know, if we feel lonely, which I'm sure we do in our business, you know, let's come together. Let's have 10 CFOs say, well, what are you doing? And what am I doing? And what am I seeing? And what are you doing about this? You know, and that kind of sharing is really powerful.
I love that analogy of a campfire. And you're talking about that through CFO conversations, right?
Yeah.
I love that analogy. And I love that idea of people, you know, actually sitting around that campfire as well, like talking about the future, you know, what we can do, how we can help each other, what we need to do in order to, you know, to navigate businesses safely through the next stage, really the next iteration of business. And this is, we're going to move into another question I want to ask you. But before I do, I want to ask you to just tell us a little bit more about your CFO conversations. How does it work? How often do you meet? You know, someone who might be interested in joining, if you could just put a little bit of flesh on the bones.
Yeah. So I started off doing conversations quarterly and getting sort of 10 people around having a discussion about what are you doing in your business? Where are the opportunities and the challenges around, having this sort of decoupling, if you like, the profit versus purpose conversation, because I don't feel that they need to be two separate things. I do, and they have been. Are you for profit? Are you not for profit? Or are you for purpose? Like, why can't we have profit and purpose? Anyway, that's one of the conversations.
Love and money, purpose and profit. Yep.
So now I'm actually going to move from quarterly to monthly. Having said that, we are now entering a busy reporting period because obviously it is year end. And so our CFO's ready to take on one more thing. But I think the answer is yes, because you have to do this in tandem with your day job. You have to get ready for the future because, as I say, the future's kind of arrived. And so I tend to have these conversations either at midday or 5 o'clock so that it doesn't kind of interrupt too much in a working day. We have, as I say, 10 people. And again, they have been multinational. So we've had mainly Australia, but we had New Zealand, and we had one of my connections from Malaysia, and I got one of my CFO connections in London. He wants to have a conversation because we can share so many insights across the world, and I think, well, what are you doing in the UK versus what are we doing here? And, there's so much benefit, rich conversation from different industries, but also different countries. So, yeah, so I've got another one that I'm trying to schedule for the 12th of July. And then I think I'll try and do them monthly after that. And they're sort of 90-minute conversations, and we'll work out a new rhythm from there. And I think that's where we're going. And speaking to these women yesterday in the CFO circle, again, every time I speak to a CFO, it's like, we need help.
And so these conversations, they're online, they're virtual conversations?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Which makes them accessible. It makes it easy to join them rather than having to physically get there as well.
Yeah. And I don't record them because I think people need to be candid. And I think sometimes when things are recorded, sometimes people do get a little worried about how that's going to be misconstrued or taken out of context, or how is it going to be used. So, I don't record them. But I do take some insights, and I do ask if I want to share anything. I do ask permission before I do that. But it really is just it's a real campfire conversation. What's going on in your world, and how can we help each other?
And that would be fascinating because, this agenda is being driven at different speeds in different parts of the world. Mm. And to be able to, get insights from others who are other CFOs around the world, I think would be fantastic. But just to be able to share not just what is happening, but how we might approach this.
Yeah.
How we are approaching this, how we might approach this, what are the challenges that we have faced, what we might face. I think what you're doing is incredible, Paula, and it's a wonderful opportunity for a CFO listening to this to get involved and to, I don't even want to say to get ahead of the agenda, because as you say, the future has arrived. we're here right now, and but I think there are not just CFOs. I think there are many in the C-suite in corporate Australia who are not quite as across it as they should be.
Yeah. And I think, again, this is a safe way for you to recognize that about yourself and come along, because there's no kind of qualifying entry, like, tell me what you've done or what you haven't done. It's kind of like, this is a place where we can test ideas. And don't feel like, you're an idiot for bringing something to the table that you wouldn't take to your auditor, for example. I mean, where else does a CFO go? Like, no one wants to go to the CEO and say, oh, I've been having this idea, what do you think? And no one's going to go to the auditor and say, oh, I've just been playing with this idea, and if we move this over there and do this, what do you think? I mean, This is why the finance landscape is such a lonely place. And I remember myself when I first got my first CFO role, it's like, who do I talk to? So, you know, you need a group of CFOs to be able to just bounce ideas around with.
Yeah. So, Paula, you talk about flipping the business model. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to dive into that and understand better what you mean by that.
Yeah, I think there's a lot there, I think. And basically what I'm saying is we've always been focused on the end product, the value out. We've always been, what are we producing and what's the value on that end product or end service? And how do we sell that service to the consumer? And that's how we make money. So what I'm saying is, in the new world of doing better business, why don't we flip that and say, what's the value coming in? What's the value of all of our inputs and all of the resources that it took to get us here? And how do we think about the impact that we've had and the costs? Or have we been degenerative in our approach? Have we been divisive? Have we been extractive? Have we paid proper value for the products that we've taken to get to our end product? So it really is that sustainable, but almost beyond sustainable. It's actually about regenerative and how do we give back to society for something that we've extracted? And the problem is that we don't value nature. So there's a lot in this flipping the business model, because, you know, we see water and air and other aspects of nature as being free. It's like, well, it's not free. It has a value. And if we take something, it has a cost of not having something else. So if we chop down trees or we kill an animal or whatever we do, we know the value that's attributed to that because we can sell it. But no one at the moment, but there's plenty of evidence out there. And I talk about this in my next green paper about how do you value nature whilst it's living? So this is a probably another conversation, but it's another body of work that says, well, how do we bring living nature onto our balance sheets rather than just something that we've made and killed?
Oh, I love that.
Mm.
I absolutely love that. And you said something I want to pick up on. You mentioned giving back, and I want to pick up on that because I have a bit of a pet issue with that phrase, giving back. I actually think it's problematic.
Okay.
Because, and everything you've talked about there around it, to me, is actually challenging the concept of giving back, because the concept of giving back suggests, you know, we have to make money and then we give back.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been the traditional approach to CSR, corporate social responsibility. Mm-hmm. It is about balancing the ledger. Mm-hmm. We know, you know, in making profits, we know we create negative impacts. So let's give back and balance that ledger.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this phrase giving back, everybody uses it. People in the purpose community use it. Yeah. And every time I hear it, I just get a little shudder, right? Because I think we're just reinforcing the problem.
Yes. Yeah. What's it like carbon credits?
Yeah.
Like buying carbon credits. And there'll be CFOs that listen to this that think, oh, I'm okay because we've had $100,000 of carbon credits and I've just removed all the badness that I've done this year. And go, no. that's not the be all and end all. Actually, we shouldn't even extract in the first place, let alone paying back for the damage that we've done. But, you know, I guess that in this transition, there's an element of having to, you know, that's the last resort, buying carbon credits. And I think some finance people don't understand that. And I think that's what I'm trying to flip our mindset around, valuing all inputs and resources before we even use them. You know, and I likened it in my first paper to a cup of coffee. You know, if we actually truly paid the price that it takes to get that coffee in our cup, we would never pay $10, $15, $20 for a takeaway coffee. But that is probably the true cost of a coffee. But, you know, no one wants to pay more than $5.30 or whatever you have for a non-cow's milk.
$7 if you're in Perth Airport.
Yeah. So that's the issue. And I think, it's that feels like the next 5-10 year journey where we actually really truly understand the impact and the cost of everything that we're doing. And we're not there yet. So we have to kind of go slowly. We have to be this bridge to kind of take the CFOs, bring the CFOs on this journey so that we become the beacons of light to, you know, to change how business is done. Because we can't, as I say, we can't flip the switch overnight. You know, we've spent hundreds, well, at least 100 years getting to where we are today.
Yes.
It's probably going to
You've got to take steps from there. And this idea of regenerative business, you know, it's being taken up. Obviously, you've got regenerative agriculture, but for example, Intrepid Travel, they're investing quite a bit in regenerative tourism, where they're thinking about, okay, how do we, when we go somewhere, how do we work with the locals so that they get real value out of this themselves? And so we leave the place better than the way we found it, but better in the sense that they value it as better. And I think that, you know, that is where we all need to move to. And don't get me wrong with giving back. Giving back has got to be part of the equation. But I feel like for many, it starts and stops there.
It's like,
make profit, give back. Whereas what you're talking about is opening up conversations with, you know, I love this idea of, you know, how do we value all the inputs? That means valuing people. That means valuing, you know, materials and thinking differently about how we can use them, and thinking differently about the business as well. Just, you know, going right back to where we started, the role of business was to serve society's needs. Somewhere along the way, we've lost the plot. And, you know, we manufacture these needs. Air Fresheners come up with new variants, and because there's a customer need around that variant. And it's like, oh my God, we've got major serious needs staring us in the face. And, you know, who said the Sustainable Development Goals are a $12 trillion market opportunity. We're just not thinking innovatively enough.
And I think that's a challenge that I've just finished writing about in my second green paper around the business model. So we think about flipping the business model, but then we actually need to go further into disrupting and actually unpacking, like decoupling everything that we thought made sense and how we've got to here. You know, it's a bit like that Marshall Goldsmith book around what got you here won't get you there. So what got us here in our business and how we've made this money and how we've got all these capital reserves, let's actually just start with a blank sheet of paper. And what is the purpose of business? What are we actually in business for now? Because that would have changed. And I don't think anyone's really seriously unpacked it all and started with a blank sheet of paper and said, well, what is it that we do and why do we do it and who are we doing it for and what does that look like? And I think I was just playing with some numbers, and this might be controversial, but if we have capital in our business, we've got reserves in our business, right? And how much of that should we apportion for business as usual versus innovation versus disruption? So, you know, I think most companies probably would say, well, I want to spend 80% of my capital reserves on continuing the business. And I might allocate 20% of my capital reserves on new stuff. And I'm saying, if business as usual is broken, then why would we invest more than half of our reserves on doing the same thing, expecting a different outcome? Why would we do that? So I know this is risky, but why would we do that? Why wouldn't we say that at least 50% of my capital allocation, my capital reserves, the money that I've got in the bank and in my balance sheet, why wouldn't I spend half of that starting again and disrupting? And why wouldn't I invest 30% of that on a team that was actually going into my business and disrupting the hell out of my business? Why wouldn't I do that? Because if I don't do that, then the customers will do that to me and my staff will do that to me. And in 3 years' time, I'll have no business anyway. So I should have done it 3 years ago, when I thought that that was a bit risky.
100%. And you're talking about innovation, right? And innovation with context, you know, the world as we live in it today and the needs of the world as we live in it today, innovation is key to success, and it's key to growth. And if a business just sits back on its business as usual laurels, what we're already seeing is new startups, purpose-led startups coming into the market. I mean, if you're starting a business today, you'd be crazy not to think about what is the real purpose, what is the higher purpose of that business beyond profit. So we have new startups starting, social enterprises, for-profit businesses who are disrupting their categories, who are stealing customers and clients, who are hungry to support businesses that are using business as a vehicle for good. And, you know, you're going to lose your market share. And you are going to become that dinosaur that didn't see what is clearly happening in time. So I love this idea of challenging, you know, what percentage of your capital reserves you use for businesses. You reserve for business as usual, and you use for innovation and business growth.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we were then sort of talking about, well, what does reconstituting business success mean? And I think that's what it means. It means, like, let's unpack everything we do and actually challenge that, the whole reason why, you know. And I think sometimes it might be, well, do we need new language? Do we need new models and new ledgers? And, you know, and some of this will be that Horizon One. So I don't know if you're familiar with the Horizon One, Two, Three kind of concepts. I'll share it with you as well, because it might be another nice piece of
information. That would be great
for the CFOs. But they talk about Horizon One as now, and there's pockets of the future in the now, and then Horizon Three is the future. It's kind of like the Nirvana, where we want to be, and the Horizon Two is like, how the hell do we go from where we are now to where we need to be? And so when we think about disrupting our business models, that is Horizon Two stuff to do to get to the Nirvana that we need to get to. So I don't have the answers, but, you know, do we need new language and new ledgers and new ways of accounting to be able to get to Nirvana? And I think the answer is yes. But, you know, what can we do right now? And again, it's a bit around, you know, some of the work that is going on around Patagonia and other purpose-led businesses that are clearly making money. And it's around that concept of ownership and that legal ownership and the stewardship versus the ownership. And again, talk about this in that first paper that I've written around how do we think about the whole system approach. And I don't know about people listening, but in my accounting professional studying and education, I never learned about whole of systems. I didn't know. I mean, okay, I knew that the impact that I had impacts and ripples further out, but I never studied systems, whole system thinking. And as a finance person, as a CFO now, we need to be aware of that whole systems thinking, because we're not just operating in isolation. We're operating within a nested whole system that I do this, it's going to have an impact over here, you know. And I, again, it goes back to that sort of regenerative principles, but also the principle of humanity and community and nature. So we've got to challenge our thinking in that sort of share of profit and reward. And I think I'm decoupling that profit on a pedestal approach where everything's tied to a financial outcome, you know, including incentives. And so again, this is a real problem right in the heart of CFO world. If you're incentivizing the CEO and the leadership team on profitable outcomes, guess what behaviors you're driving?
Yes,
you're driving
yes,
the wrong
yes.
behaviors.
Yes, 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 yes. Yeah, so, we've got to challenge all of that.
Yeah.
So yeah, and I know of businesses where, you know, they are driven. They are strongly driven by purpose, but they retain those structures, right? Mm. And they retain bonuses for execs, and you can't deliver it unless you change, you know, the structures that feed the beast.
Yeah. It's surprising. Like, and, you know, surprising what you measure, you know, gets managed. So if you're measuring the CEO on EBITDA and profit over the next 3 years and you pay him $1 million, like, guess what's going to happen?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I'm really inspired and excited by this conversation. You've mentioned some of your green papers. Can you just tell us what you've written? Because I'd love to include them in the show notes and I can't wait to get my teeth into them.
So, yeah, I've written two and one's been released. The second one is in design phase. But the first one's regenerative business. How do we do better business? And that is an introduction around what does even better business look like? What does a regenerative system look like? And that's some examples, some real key examples for CFOs around businesses that are doing, you know, things for the good, for purpose, and they're making profit. So this is not one at the cost of the other. It's actually how do we, you know, challenge our own thinking to be able to get good outcomes for earth outcomes as well as financial outcomes. So that was the first one. And the second one is around the business model. So it's about reimagining the business model. And that will be out probably early July. As I say, it's in design at the moment.
So that will probably be, we'll link to both of those because we're recording this podcast interview in June, and it should be out,
it'll be
late
out
July, early August. Yeah. So we'll include both of those links there. Paula, thank you so much for joining me on the For Love and Money podcast. I've really enjoyed our conversation. I'm keen to pick up this conversation with you beyond this interview. What would you like to invite listeners to do? So bear in mind, not all of our listeners are CFOs, probably only a small number, but I'm hoping that if you're listening to this and like me, you're going, yes, 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 then please, you will know a CFO or two or three. And I urge you to share this episode with them and start a conversation. And to those CFOs, Paula, what would you like to say?
Yeah, to reach out and have a conversation around the campfire with me and your peers, because this matters, and we need to drive this, lead this, and, you know, come and have a conversation with us and other CFOs that are concerned about it as well. And reach out to me on my LinkedIn or at my website or email, and I'm sure we'll share the details there. And CFO Conversations is the LinkedIn area. I'd love to hear from you. Download my papers, and I'd love to hear what you think and carry on the conversation. As I say, I'm holding these roundtables each month, and so, you know, there'll be one in the next few months that you can come along to and continue that conversation.
I hope you'll get a lot of them coming to these conversations, and I look forward to hearing more about how they're going. Paula Kensington, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Caroline.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the For Love and Money podcast. If you'd like to take a deeper dive into the purpose movement, visit us at thecauseeffect.com.au. And remember, doing good is good for business. So if you're not doing good, then what are you doing?